You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. I am your fill-in host, Christina Long. Matt Jones is on his way to Springfield to cover Arkansas baseball against Missouri State tonight. He has a great preview on WholeHogSports.com today, looking at Zach Stewart playing against his former team, where he spent a lot of years, got a lot of hits. So you can check that out on our website today. Today on the show, Tom Murphy is joining me in studio. We're going to talk a little bit of Razorback football. We've both been out at practice, been hearing from coaches for the last couple of weeks. They're back at it now after spring break. Before we get started, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, and they are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, or you're looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. We also want to thank our friends at Eglin's Best. When it comes to game day, you want the best in your lineup, and that includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. Score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. You can visit eglinsbest.com for more information. Tom, we're going over to football here in a couple hours. We're going to talk a little bit about what we've seen so far. We've seen, 3 practices now? We had a few before spring break when they got going. Then they were off for a bit, and now we're back.
Right. 3 before. And, you know, I do want to credit Kyle Parkinson and the staff over there. They filter through all the assistant coaches, and so we can tailor our coverage to match up, you know, if the defensive backs are coming in the room or the running backs, what have you. And it's a good way to get to know the coaches and, in a way, for them to do kind of a public speaking thing. I think it's all positive outcomes for Arkansas football, and I like the way it sets up.
Yeah, from our standpoint, when we're going in, we're doing these interviews, it's set up pretty similarly to how it was with Sam Pittman. You know, the assistants are coming in groups. They'll bring in a couple players. Yesterday, we talked to defensive backs coaches. You wrote about how those two guys, Darren Wilson and Eddie Hicks, were teammates at Southern Miss. It's a cool story. You know, Eddie Hicks kind of credited Darren Wilson with getting him into coaching when he was an older player, when Wilson was a freshman. Tom wrote about that yesterday at WholeHogSports.com. We also talked to a couple of DBs, well, one linebacker / DB in Kamori House, which right. That's been an interesting thing to track. We can talk about that in a bit. But media perspective, it's been similar from that standpoint. Like you said, it's a good way for these assistant coaches to get experience with speaking, for the players to get experience speaking. I also really like it, you know, some of these player interviews, because so many of these guys are new, and this has been the case for Arkansas teams for the last several years when there's this much, you know, they've had so much turnover. It's the first chance for us to meet them. It's the first chance for fans to hear their voices, to learn a little about how they got here. So I found it to be very valuable in that sense, especially with some of these new transfers.
Absolute truth. With the turnover that is exists in football, basketball, and other sports, it's important. And I think the U of A has realized the more they can connect their coaches and their players to the fans, the better outcome, the better people feel about it. And if you don't feel like you know the players, they're not out in the media and doing public events, then they feel disconnected. And when your team is struggling on the field, it exacerbates the problem. And so I think I credit them. I think Ryan Silverfield has been out in various media events, and he's talked to you and I both in one-on-one interviews. And that's important, because if you get disconnected, it's easier for fans to, you know, turn off the medium or not pay attention to the team. And I feel, in a way, Sam Pittman the last few years got a little bit insular, mm-hmm. and I don't think it served him well. And practices were more closed, and the fans just disconnect from you easier when you're struggling. And so, For Ryan Silverfield to come in and have this approach to begin with, and relatively open practices so far, I think in the long run could serve them well. Because if you don't connect to your fans, you're doing yourself a disservice.
I agree that Silverfield's done a really good job of kind of, you know, he's done all the speaking engagements you got to do. He's doing the interviews, things like that. I'm curious, you've covered a lot of new coaches. I think some of that, what I'll be interested to see is how it unfolds next year. What happens if the season doesn't go the way they want it to go? What happens when the losses start happening? How does it go then? Because I think what happened with Pittman was he started to hear, you know, you hear the talk, you hear the hot seat, you hear the criticism. And I don't think he, and that's hard. I would respond terribly to it. I understand why exactly. People don't respond well. But I think how Soderfield responds to that, how different coaches respond to that is really telling. But I'm curious, with some of the first year coaches you've covered, do you feel like there's anything different about how Soderfield is approaching year one? Or is this kind of what you get with a new coach when they haven't done anything wrong yet?
Right. That's a great question. And I agree with you on the Sam Pittman thing. You start losing a little bit, and then you kind of get this bunker mentality in your mind that you have to close the ranks, and then it kind of grows upon itself. And then you have an issue like when Joe Adams and Jarius Wright wanted to come to a game, and they were closed off. And so I think with Bray Cook on the staff now, that's a big help for them. It's a good start, and we will see. If week two they go to Utah, it's not a good outcome, then you have Georgia. It could kind of feed upon itself. And so how he deals with those types of things when you do get punched in the mouth is a big deal. And another branch of this is how open are your practices? When I first got to Alabama years ago, it was the Mike Dubose regime, but they had just come off the Gene Stallings regime. So that ties back to Bear Bryant. And all Arkansas fans can associate with Bear Bryant, but they had a policy. If you were at practice and you saw something, injury, fight, something like that, you were not to report on it, mm-hmm. that this was your means for access to practice unless you asked Gene Stallings about that. And there are times, they told me, where he would comment on an injury. If it's season-ending thing, what's the sense? A fight in practice. Maybe he wants to explain what happened. And sometimes fights in practice are good. There's already been one this spring at Arkansas. And so anyway, I thought that was a pretty good policy. Talk to the coach about it. And so long story to say that what your policies are in terms of how much media access you grant, and then what goes on is always important. And so far, through three practices, it feels like Ryan Silverfield's been pretty open. We've actually seen a few team periods, not, any full tackling yet. I mean, we'll see how that progresses. I don't think we're going to have access to the scrimmages. So how it differs maybe from other practices, there's probably going to be a few more open periods so far than there was early during the Sam Pittman years. But, I mean, I come from an era originally where spring was wide open. And you would cover, and then when 2-a-day started, both practices would be wide open. You'd almost feel like you were participating. With Houston Nutt, when I first got here, you'd go to the morning practice, and you'd be hot. And then you'd do interviews, and you're in there transcribing, and then it's noontime, and you're kind of tired. You're transcribing tape. You're hot. Then you go back out and cover the evening practice, and it was camp was a brutal grind for the players and for the people who covered them. And in the meantime, we were doing tabs back then, and you'd stay up late at night to do tab work. So August is a completely different beast.
It is. And because it's just going to be 100 degrees, especially on the turf.
It is.
I always feel so bad. I'm like, I'm just standing here and I want to die. I'm not actually even having to move. They're doing so much stuff. It's so bad.
That turf can get so hot.
It's crazy.
And it gives me a reminder, the end of the Memphis game, you know, it might have been 90 degrees. And so you're thinking, okay, it's hot, but down on that turf, we were down there at the end of the game. That was brutal hot. Not as hot as it was at Oklahoma State 2 years ago at the end of that game. And no wonder Jaquindon Jackson was having some leg cramps. He ran a lot in that game, and it was brutal hot down on that turf.
I think one thing that's been interesting is the approach to kind of helping us get to know these people. You know, we talked about, the standard, we get to talk to a couple players every couple days. We get to meet some guys that way. But one thing they did that I don't think we've talked about on the show yet is the media lunch they did. And this is a little bit in the weeds. I know fans don't really care what happens with reporters, but I think this is interesting because I think it shows an example of them kind of doing that work to kind of build that goodwill. This was something that they did at Clemson when I covered them. And I think it's kind of... And tell me, did Alabama do this when you covered them? I think it's kind of an old school approach, but I don't know how common it was a while ago. I don't know.
Well, my memory's a little bit murky. I don't think there was actually like luncheons. Now, Houston Nutt on Sundays after games, the media would be in there in the coach's room and have a long conversation with Houston. And so, but I agree with you on how this luncheon was a way, and they were pretty adamant, no recorders, don't report anything, no photos. And so the coaches felt more free to talk. And Tim Kramsey, I happened to sit at the table.
I was going to ask you who you talked to and what did you guys talk about?
Well, a lot of different things and stuff that you keep in your head that you can apply later. But his approach to recruiting quarterbacks, how A.J. Hill wound up at Memphis and what he thinks of the competition at quarterback. And so very, very enlightening. And I know Tim Kramsey all the better for it because of that.
Yeah, I talked to Landius Wilkerson a lot. I was sitting next to him. And honestly, our table was funny. It was Richard Davenport, Ethan Westerman, and I, and then some of the coaches. And honestly, we mostly talked about food. We barely talked about football at all. It was very funny. But we were talking to them a lot about getting here and the area and that kind of thing. But I think stuff like that is good. You know, you get – it's also interesting to listen to them talk to each other. There were a couple other coaches there, a couple of defensive line guys. And so it was interesting to hear how they talk to each other about – you know, we were talking about their previous coaching stops and things like that. And hearing how they interact with each other was interesting. Guys that have known each other, they've coached against each other before. They've met at coaches' conventions, things like that. There's so many ties that you don't realize. But I think that's an example of them kind of doing that work of kind of building those relationships early in a way that was one thing that I've never seen at Arkansas. I mean, I haven't been covering Arkansas that long, but that's uncommon now. At Clemson, I was like, when they did that, I was very surprised. And they were really good with media.
So here we are. We're talking about
Yeah.
it. So in a way, that was a positive effect for Kyle Parkinson and Ryan Silverfield to set that up. Now, Ryan came in, I think, maybe later in mm-hmm. the lunch. But
yes.
All this...
And then we did an actual press conference, mm-hmm. too, and we asked him questions about the game. And yeah.
But all the coaches were there, and you could – I think they might have wanted a little bit more mingling, but you know, when you have food, you're just kind of
sitting
there.
It's hard. Everybody just yeah.
And we talked about food a little bit as well, but it was very informative. Yeah. And I enjoyed it.
Let's talk a little bit about what we're actually seeing on the practice field. We've seen quite a bit of team period now compared to what we've gotten before and what I kind of thought we were going to get. A question I keep getting from people is how much of a battle is this quarterback battle really? And I think that's something that was a question coming in because I remember a couple years ago when Taylen Green first got here and they talked about how it was going to be a quarterback battle and we were all gearing up for one. And then we show up on the first day of practice and it was abundantly clear from day one that, okay, Taylen Green is the quarterback. I don't really get that sense here. I don't think that necessarily means that they're unsure or whatever. I don't think this is a quarterback battle just to say that there is one, just to challenge KJ Jackson. But at the same time, I will be surprised if it is not KJ Jackson. Is that where are you at on the quarterbacks?
Where I'm at is I'm going with what we heard from Kramsey and Ryan Silverfield about it. AJ Hill was a big time recruit. I mean, they got him. He had SEC.
Wasn't he like their highest rated recruit ever at Memphis?
That's right. That's what we talked about at the table. And he's certainly a big talent. He's got a little bit of a windup in his throw mm-hmm. that I think they need to work on because you have to get rid of the ball faster in the SEC. They're working on that. In my mind, I think KJ Jackson is in the lead, but it's not to say that he can't be beaten. So I think that's why they're switching out who works for the first team. And also, this harkens back to the beginning of the Chad Morris era and that's the last quarterback battles I can remember, because since then it's been pretty cut and dried. Felipe Franks came in, he beat out KJ Jefferson pretty quickly, and then it was KJ's team, and then so we haven't had many quarterback battles. But during the Chad Morris days, we did. And he made the mistake. Almost immediately, it felt like there was a guys who were returning and then the new guys. Mm. And it seemed to me the returning players felt like that staff favored the younger new guys, their guys. And it turned into a issue in the locker room. And so I think they've done a pretty good job from everything we've heard so far of melding this. We are all one team, and the whole all-in philosophy, the new guys and the returning guys, we respect you all. We're going to find out what your strengths are and fit them into our system the best we can. And I think that's why you're seeing a relatively equal run in the periods we've watched between the two quarterbacks. And that way the players see what happens. And then when you make that decision, the players already instinctively know what they've seen, who's been the most in command in the huddle, who's completed the most percentage of passes, who understands the scheme the best and the adjustments the best, and then you go from there.
I'm always really interested in, and kind of the theme of what we've been talking about is messaging. And I'm always interested in listening to what coaches are saying and then figuring out, okay, what are they actually trying to tell us here by what they're willing to talk about and what they're saying. And I do think Sometimes coaches will go into a spring practice and kind of they'll say there's a quarterback battle because they don't want to name a quarterback in the spring because they don't want to disrespect the other quarterbacks. They don't want to make it super obvious. And so that was my question was, okay, is this one of those cases where they're saying, oh, it could be anybody's job. But I actually do think, like you've said, I think they really admire AJ Hill. I don't think they brought him here just to push KJ Jackson. I think they wanted to see who was going to give them the best shot. And I think they really do think that they're going to let that go on until basically week one.
That's what they said, right? I mean, I believe that's
I'm believing them.
That's what Silverfield said.
And from what we've seen, that's what I think that backs that up.
And so the players are going to see what summer is like, how often they go out, who's leading, and all those types of things. But you want both of them to be ready because you never know when you might have to bring the backup guy in. And I'll tell you what, to Bobby Petrino's credit, they had KJ ready to go in that Texas game when Talen threw that weird interception, the pitch thing that – So Rohan Jones didn't run the right route. So Talen was thrown off, and instead of, you know, adapting and doing the best, he's under the gun on every play. There's so much mental pressure that you're under that he did that flip. So, but KJ was ready to go. I know he took a blindside sack and gave up a touchdown in that game, but he drove them in the fourth quarter, and that's on tape. He did that, and the players in the locker room knew he did it.
And then obviously Silverfield and his staff, they didn't have to keep KJ Jackson around. They saw something from that film and from him that they wanted to keep. They didn't have to do that, especially with a guy if they thought they could get a guy like AJ Hill. There's a reason that he's here.
Right. And, you know, it's better than losing him because then who knows who you'd be filling in with. And will this be enough quarterback talent? Because that's one thing Kramsey said at the table that I feel comfortable repeating is because we asked him about Vanderbilt. How did Vanderbilt get so good so fast? And it's like quarterback play. Diego Pavia was in tune with the system. He's a leader and not a super tall guy, but he ran it. He completed passes, and Vanderbilt was really good. So if you get good quarterback play, there's no telling how far they can take you.
I'm really interested in when you have a team that's so new, it's hard to pick one particular position that's the most interesting because everything is so new, especially when you have a new staff, it's going to look different. I've been trying to pay close attention to the receivers because that's an area where they do bring some key guys back. I'm really interested in what Ismail Cissé is going to do just because I was really intrigued by him when they brought him in last year, and then obviously we never got to see him after the injury. So he's been working with the ones a decent amount. I'm interested how they're going to use him. I think, you know, it seems like they've got kind of their new outside guy. So I think we'll see how that shapes up at receiver. I think CJ Brown could have a really big year. Is there anybody in the receiver room or otherwise on kind of those offensive skill players that you have your eye on early?
Well, obviously we have to talk about Marshall, right? Chris Marshall, discipline problems in his past. He was involved in the fight that took place in one of the springs that DJ Williams talked about after we had left. But you saw the respect that Joker Johnson gave him yesterday when we talked. So he's a big-time talent. It's all about directing the energy and the spirit you have on the field in the right ways. And so that happened. The teammates saw it. How you respond to that is going to be big. He's 6'3". He's the part. And so I think he's going to play a big role. I agree with you. I think C.J. Brown's role could improve. Fopel, the New Mexico State transfer, has gotten some run with the ones. So I'm interested there. And then some guys who, Antonio Jordan, we didn't quite get to see him at full strength. He's not the fastest guy, but he's one of those, if you throw a 50-50 ball, he can seal a guy off. He's got a great catch radius. He can get up. So there's a lot of intriguing. I'm not sure if they have the depth at the top end of your receiving core. It's some other teams they'll face in the SEC. But all these guys we just mentioned, and there are more, who I think are going to factor in.
I really like asking defensive guys or guys on the other side of the ball, who are you going up against that's giving you trouble or who stands out to you? I think that's super telling because they're not going to lie to you. Right. Some guys will be like, oh, everybody's good. And you're like, okay, I can throw that one out. But if they name a guy, that says something. They're not going to just pull a name out just to say one. Like, it does mean something. And so they both talked about Kamori House and Jaheim Joker. I wonder is Jaheim going to be one of those guys that we start writing Joker because everyone calls him that, or are we going to write Jaheim? We'll see.
That's a great question. Tenarius Wright grew from being a prospect Tenarius Wright to, by the end, it was Tank Wright.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. So we'll see what happens with Jaheim Joker Johnson. So he and Kamori House both talked about Chris Marshall. And hearing from them yesterday, those are two new guys that we've gotten to talk to. I think Kamori House is so interesting because of what a big deal it was for them to get him out of the portal. I mean, one of the highest rated players in the portal. I think portal rankings can be a little tough, but usually when a lot of places are saying a guy's good, you can kind of bet that a guy's good. He's bounced around a little bit, started at Washington. And so I think they seem to be using him in an interesting way. You know, he's a linebacker. They're using him kind of in that star role. He came out and talked with the DBs yesterday. What do you kind of think of him and how they're using him?
Well, I think that was telling that he came and talked with the DBs. They like him. He's playing the star position. And when you look at his body, it's just really a true tweener type guy. North Carolina had him, like, I think, listed at linebacker. And what you look at him, he's like, he's not super linebacker size. So I think the star position, and I think it was Darren Wilson who said, when you watch him cover, the way his hips turn, the way he can cover man-to-man, how could he have been listed as a linebacker? So that's a good sign that your nickel slash star guy is somebody of Kamori House's ilk. There's a lot of tweeners I think they got in this class. Steven Soles, the Kentucky guy, and you wrote a nice deal about getting to know him. Pass rush specialist, you know, how will he be employed on this defense? Kind of falls in the same category as House. A guy who can play up in the box if needed, can identify the run and go and deliver hits, but also can cover. So, you know, very valuable piece.
I'm asking you this question genuinely, like, for my own knowledge too, because I have not spent enough time watching the defensive line in practice. Today, when we go out there, I want to spend a little bit more time focusing on them. What are you seeing defensive line-wise? Because defensive line, there was a lot of angst last year, you know, even going into the year about depth. And then that became a concern when there were some injuries, just some stuff not working out. What are you seeing defensive line-wise, particularly on the interior? And what do you kind of make of how that's shaping up?
Well, so far, has it not been the returnee, David Oakey, mm-hmm. lining up kind of at the nose? And it seemed to me like they wanted to start with the three-man front more and then have that jack position, which is Charlie Collins and some other guys. And so depth is going to be an issue. It just is. I mean, I think back to what were the best teams in the country doing at the end of the year. And Mario Cristobal said something, I think, during the semifinal game about it's all about your physicality and in the trenches. And that's what Kurt Cignetti talked about with Indiana, how physical you are. I think Silverfield understands this. And so recruiting and having defensive tackle depth is going to be so huge. And I'm not sure if they've got the numbers to be great this year. But that's what I've seen. Oakey, Quincy Rhodes is certainly going to be a guy. If you can make it so teams can't get away with double-teaming him more, then that's a big plus in your favor. But they're testing out lots of different guys, and you're right. So many new guys that we have to start learning the personnel and learning the depth as we go along.
Yeah, and figuring out who they really are believing in. Especially, I mean, the secondary, I kind of tried to ask the secondary coaches yesterday, you know, Ryan Silverfield had talked about, he had told us, you know, hey, don't read too much into who's with the ones and the twos. And he was talking about how when it's early and a lot of people are new, you've got to pick and choose who's going to be with those teams. You're not going to probably put a true freshman who just showed up with the ones.
Right.
Even if you think he's pretty good, you're probably not going to do that. And so I was curious with the DBs specifically, when literally everyone but Miguel Mitchell is new, how do you even know? I mean, obviously, if you watched film, you have an idea of who you like the best. But what do you do when you're trying to decide these teams, especially when one thing they talked about, especially Darren Wilson, was talking about how they want to kind of cross-train, have that versatility, have those kind of tweener guys. How do you decide who's going to go where? And he basically was like, yeah, I mean, we've watched the film, we figured it out, but also that's what this, you know, that's what spring is for. And so that's what we're tracking when we go to practice is, okay, what are they kind of learning? What are we learning as we see these guys go?
The players that move up the depth chart realize that everything you do during that winter conditioning they did, the battle on the hill, the war on the hill, everything is judged, everything is rated. And if you rise to the top in your position group or, you know, in those pods that they created, that helps you get on the field faster. And sometimes, I'll throw one example that just came to mind. Selman Bridges, he was at the top of the cornerbacks last spring. He wound up not playing very much because of whatever things they were evaluating on. And you would think Selman Bridges would be in the cornerback rotation, but he wasn't.
Where did he end up? Do you remember where he transferred to?
I think it was somewhere.
I don't know off the top of my head.
But I wouldn't swear to
Yeah,
it.
I can't remember off the top of my
There's
head.
There's too much to keep
but
up
But he was a
with.
Guy with a lot of potential. Like, I'm interested if he goes somewhere and turns into something. Like, he's just, since you pulled that example, I'm curious what he does.
Right, and I did a Hog Futures on him, and you feel like you get to know them a little bit better and all that. Like, you'll probably keep track with the guys that you did the getting to know, Steven Souls and these other guys. But it's everything has value to it. And so how they set the first group that ran out there had something to do with how you looked on tape, what your leadership skills have been like, were you a leader in the war on the hill, and all those types of things. But we've seen the O-line has kind of stayed the same, the D-line, those guys have kind of run out there repeatedly. And in the secondary, they've swapped out the corners. I think Mitchell has been with the ones just about all the time. But Lakai Rowland and Joker Johnson have seemingly kind of rotated back in with the ones a little bit more. But there's a lot of guys. The kid from Little Rock, is it Braden Jones?
Lee.
Braden Lee. And I'm sorry. But we're like everybody else. We have to
learn
the roster.
We're learning all this. Yeah.
And I've drawn blanks on a few position groups so far today. But I think it's like Dave Van Horn says sometimes with baseball. The players will let you know what you need to do. And the players themselves kind of know who did the best. And so I think in a true football situation, the players almost instinctively know who will wind up being with the ones. But what you want is fighters, guys who don't satisfy with being the second team and keep pushing. And the more of that you have, the better depth you're going to have.
Yeah, you need that level of competition. And you need guys who aren't going to – and I think maybe they're not being a spring portal is going to help with this. You need guys that aren't going to say, I was with the twos all spring, I'm leaving. And so maybe that spring portal, you know, hopefully changes that. But I think that's something that's changed a lot, is how you also have to navigate that whole thing.
What a relief. And every time we ask Ryan Silverfield about NCAA rules, he always says – that's for now. That's for today.
Yeah.
It could
change. They're going to change them when we walk out of here.
When I get back to my office, it might be changed. So that's his way of saying, I think all the coaches are pretty happy that there's not a spring portal, because you just feel more comfortable with what you do.
You know this is your team.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when they could leave after spring, I mean, what a disaster that was. And so hopefully some of these rules start making more sense.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about the role they've created for Bray Cook, where he's handling high school and alumni relations, which was a job I think they really needed. I think that was something that, I don't know if he pitched that position to them. I don't know if Silverfield sought him out for it, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if he had kind of seen, you know, being a high school coach around here, being plugged in with high school coaches, if he had kind of seen that there was some frustration with the previous staff and the way that they had or didn't have relationships with some of the high schools and also with the alums. You mentioned, you know, there was the kind of viral moment with some of the former players not being able to go in the locker room, and, you know, whether that was a misunderstanding or not, I don't really remember what ended up happening with that. But those guys, I mean, Joe Adams was at the last practice. I saw him. It was so funny. He was killing me. He was right up. I think he was watching the receivers. Maybe it was the tight ends. And I would have guessed that he was a coach. He was so close. He was like shoulder to shoulder with Antonio Jordan. He was like leaned over, hands on his knees, looking at everything. Would have guessed that he was a coach. He was so locked into what they were doing. It was awesome.
Well, he's been a coach.
Yeah.
And
I think he currently is. Is he at Harbor? He had a Harbor shirt on. I'm guessing he works at Harbor. I don't remember.
I suppose so. But yeah, he's in a coach.
Yeah. And so it's been cool to see. There were a lot of former players, some of them recent, some of the guys from just this past team, which was common. We would see that last year even. But it's been cool to see different guys show up. It's been cool to see high school coaches from all over the area show up. And then you see Coach Silverfield go over and talk to those guys. You see other coaches talk to those guys. And Silverfield made a really good point that I'm sure a lot of coaches approach it this way, but it was interesting to kind of hear him talk about it, where he was saying, we have recruits come in, and we have high school coaches come in, and how we can talk to them in our office all day, and we can tell them about the culture here and show them the facilities all we want. But for them to actually come in and see how we coach the guys we have, that's what's going to sell them on it or not. That's what's going to tell them if this is the place for them or not. And I think that it makes complete sense. And again, I don't think that's necessarily just a Ryan Silverfield thing. Like, people are doing this. But I think it's important to be prioritizing that and saying that part out loud and really inviting people in that way.
I'm glad you took it in this direction. I have a lot of avenues of thought based on what you just said. And one, when you do that, the players feel more welcome. What does that do? It feeds upon itself. I feel better about my alma mater now. I had access. I got to watch practice. I happened to bump into Jarius Wright See, I have a South Arkansas connection. My in-laws are from Warren, and so I've always had kind of an affinity for the Warren guys and all. And so I bumped into Jarius, and I asked him how things are now, and he better. So that's a good indication. I think it was smart. Bray Cook obviously had the tie-in with Silverfield, with the Vikings. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the genesis of his position, but it makes a lot of sense the more that door is open. And I did talk to Bray at the very first practice, and there were a few people there, but it was an indoor. You know, remember, it was kind of cold. It was not not a pretty day. And he goes, as spring goes on, we kind of discouraged him from coming to the first one because it was inside. And as it goes on, there's going to be more players, more coaches from around the area. And then you feel connected to the program. That opens the doors for recruiting. It opens all kinds of doors. And having the alums on board here is, I think it's very special. And it's something you have to do, particularly given the current state of Arkansas football.
Yeah, it's really important. And, you know, people have been really concerned with in-state recruiting, with how that's going. Obviously, the high school coaches make that connection, but I think having a connection to your alums also factors into that. I think people started to feel, and this happens with a lot of new coaches, I think Arkansas fans really want to feel like this is their program and that this is a program that's representative of their state. And I think Sam Pittman did a really good job of that early. Sam Pittman felt like, you know, he obviously wanted to be here. He obviously cared. And I think even at the end he did, and still does. But I think that was something that won a lot of people over to him. I think when you have a new person like Ryan Silverfield, you have to do a lot to kind of make those strides. And when you're doing a lot in the transfer portal and you're bringing a lot of guys in, you have to find those connections in other ways. You have to make people care about these guys that may or may not be here next year in other ways. And I think bringing alums back and kind of letting them feel connected, you know, doing some of the things even that they started doing last season with, you know, honoring Darren McFadden, so getting back to your roots a little bit, I think is important. And that started before Silverfield got here. Obviously, the McFadden thing was before that. But I think they've started to do some made some strides there that I think they've needed to make.
Absolutely needed to make. And if you don't make them, then you're kind of in a cycle. And I feel bad for Sam Pittman. He had some big with that Texas win. I'll never forget. Yeah. And the beating Tennessee.
Yeah, but Tennessee was amazing.
It really was. But the highlights were starting to get fewer and far between. And one thing I always come back to is how close they were in those games last year, despite all the problems, despite the turnover margin, despite the did not have all the personnel you needed on defense. They didn't hit in the portal like they had in years past. They were that close in so many games, which – if I'm an Arkansas fan, that gives me some hope that if things are done in a better fashion, we have high-end skilled people, we can put enough talent together on the fronts, which are so huge, that maybe there's a chance they win more games next year. I mean, I'm not holding my breath that they're going to be in the middle of the pack of the SEC. There's so much ground to make up. But when you approach it the way they have, connecting to the alumni, connecting to the fans, it gives you a better chance because it feeds upon itself.
We're going to get out of here and go to practice soon. But before we do, is there anything in particular you want to watch at practice today? Are you going in with any ideas of what you need to see?
It all happens so fast. I like the idea that you have a game plan.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm just showing up and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to see today. But I know that I feel like I have not paid enough attention to the defense. And so I know today I really need to watch that.
Let's coordinate.
Okay.
You have some specific interests, and then I'll look at some others and then we can combine
Perfect.
Notes. I wish, in retrospect, I'm going to tell myself that I had come with a depth chart. Mm-hmm. Some of the names that I wanted to mention, I've kind of forgot their names, certain guys, because it takes some repetition and really studying over and over to feel comfortable.
When you've got like 60 new people, it's just it takes a little bit. It's a process. We're getting there.
We are.
Thanks so much for coming in, Tom. And thanks everybody for listening. Matt Jones will be back here tomorrow. I'm sure he'll talk a little bit of baseball. Bubba Carpenter will be back on Thursday. And we hope you'll read everything that we're doing over at WholeHogSports.com.